شو
श्रीमद् भागवतम फर्स्ट कैंटो चैप्टर 17 टेक्स्ट नंबर 29 तम जिगाम सुमभिप्रेत्य विहाय नृपलांचनम तत्पादमूलं शिरसा समगात् भयविह्वलः तं हिम जिघांसुं विलिंग टू किल अभिप्रेत्य नोइंग इट वेल विहाय लिविंग असाइड Vipalanchanam, the dress of a king. Tatpadamulam, at his feet. Shirasa, by the head. Samagat, fully surrendered. Bhayavihvalaha, under pressure of fearfulness. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. When the personality of Kali understood that the king was willing to kill him, he at once abandoned the dress of a king and, under pressure of fear, completely surrendered to him, bowing his head. Purport. The royal dress of the personality of Kali is artificial. The royal dress is suitable for a king or kshatriya. But when a lower class man artificially dresses himself as a king, his real identity is disclosed by the challenge of a bona fide kshatriya like Maharaja Parikshit. A real kshatriya never surrenders. He accepts the challenge of his rival kshatriya and he fights either to die or to win. Surrender is unknown to a real kshatriya. In the age of Kali, there are so many pretenders dressed and posed like administrators or executive heads. But their real identity is disclosed when they are challenged by a real kshatriya. Therefore, when the artificially dressed personality of Kali saw that to fight Maharaj Parikshit was beyond his ability, he bowed down his head like a subordinate and gave up his royal dress. Om Ajnanatimiran. When the personality of Kali understood that the king was willing to kill him, he at once abandoned the dress of a king and under pressure of fear, completely surrendered to him, bowing his head. Prabhupada here differentiates between a real kshatriya and a artificially dressed kshatriya. What is the lakshana of a kshatriya? Prabhupada says here, the kshatriya is one who never surrenders to his enemy. He accepts the challenge of his rival kshatriya and he fights either to die or to win. There is no third possibility. Prabhupada tells about one Yashwant Singh, who was actually a great general in the army of Aurangzeb. So once Yashwant Singh returns to his palace and his wife comes to hear that he is battering the door. So she looks through the window and says, "Impossible, how can Yashwant Singh come back like this? After having been defeated in the battle." She says, "Either he will win and come return with a victorious march with all his other soldiers and everyone. Otherwise he must have died in the battle. The one who is battering the door is certainly not my husband," she said. And she refused to open the door. So Prabhupada quotes this in the same context. Kshatriya either dies or he wins. He never surrenders. Which means a kshatriya is never afraid of loss of life. He is never afraid that I will lose my life in the battle. He doesn't cry. He doesn't take shelter in order to save his life. Or he doesn't go and hide himself somewhere. He boldly faces the battle. That's what he says here. There has been in the great land of Bharat Varsha many great kings in the past. The beauty of these kings is that they all are Rajarishis. For example, the Rajputs. Rajputs, many of them, and they were very great devotees of Krishna on one hand. So for them, Krishna conscious culture was interwoven practically in their blood. They to take darshan of Krishna every day. You must have seen these Rajasthani paintings of Krishna and the gopis, and Krishna lifting the Govardhan hill and all those pictures. In that times, Krishna consciousness flourished in a very great way. And they were also following all the Vedic principles very purely. Like for example, principles of chastity of the woman. Similarly, the men respecting women and the Varnashram Dharma in the society. These things are followed very nicely. So Prabhupada explains about one such king also who lived some 1,000 years ago. It was the period when the Mughals were trying to invade India. So they were trying to come through the Persian entrance. They were, the early days they were trying to attack through Punjab and gradually spread their influence all over India. So there was one Hindu king who didn't have a very great army. He had a small army. But all the soldiers he had in his army, they were all very spirited Kshatriyas. And the army was small, but they were a very spirited army. So the Muslim king had a very big army, but still they were not as spirited as the Hindu army. So they were driven out, not just once or twice, almost 17 times. The Muslim king was defeated. And every time the Muslim king would be defeated, he would come back. He would be caught, he would be held a captive. And the Hindu king would tell him, okay, this time I am sparing your life, go. I don't want to kill you. And he let him go. So 17 times it happened like that. 18th time, the Muslim king realized, I cannot win over this fellow. So he had an alliance with one another Hindu king. And jointly they attacked the first Hindu king and they defeated him. And then he was caught in that battle. Of course, he was taken. The army was seized and this king was taken and he was about to be killed. So the Muslim king said, I will not commit the same mistake which you committed because you have been always sparing my life 17 times. And that is how now you are in this position now, that you are facing your own death in my hands. And he said, I am not going to spare your life. I am going to cut off your head. But he said, before that, he said, I want to learn one very important thing from you. I heard that you can blindfold yourself and still, like the Shabdabedi Bond, you know Shabdabedi Bond, you can hit a bird, a dove or a bird, from a distance of 100 meters. I have heard about this. So I always wanted to learn it myself. So we would like to see, we will arrange a very big arena where thousands and thousands of people will be watching you. If you are able to successfully hit the bird, I will spare your life. Maybe I'll consider sparing your life, he said. And the Hindu king knew very well, this fellow cannot be trusted. He is anyway going to kill me. So he was very thoroughly blindfolded, so tightly that he cannot remove the blindfold himself. So there were soldiers who had blindfolded him. So he was given a quiver of arrows and the bow. And then he was aiming at the direction. And then the king said, as soon as the bird is out of the box, you have to hear the flapping of the wings of the bird. With that sound, you have to hit the bird. The bird won't even make a sound. Only the flapping of the wings. So this man agreed. He said, yes, whenever the box is open, you tell me, I will hit it. So as soon as the box was open, the king shouted, yes, the bird is out of the box now, shoot it. And he shot the king, straight to his heart. And the king fell to the ground dead on the spot. Seeing this, all the other Muslim soldiers, they got wild. Then immediately they see this sinful rascal, they all removed their sword. And whoever shouted whatever name, somebody said, kill him, immediately shot him. Somebody said, cut off his head, ta, another one. Finish him, ta. So like this he was standing, arrows, wherever he heard the sound, he hit. In this way he killed hundreds of soldiers single-handedly. Hundreds of soldiers. As long as he had the quivers, arrows in his quiver, he finished them all. When all the arrows got over, of course he could not remove his blindfold. So he didn't cry for his life. He didn't bow down to the king and beg him to spare his life. Nor did he run to some hideouts, trying to escape for his life. But after killing all these people to the best of his ability, he immediately sat in meditation. And he meditated on God with complete absorption. And most of the Muslim soldiers on the spot were killed, and many ran away also. But there were a handful who were left who were envious of him, and they took a sword and cut off his head. The Prabhupada says, this is Kshatriya spirit. He says, single-handedly he killed so many soldiers in one shot. Even the word Dasharath. Dasharath means one who can simultaneously thwart the attempt of 10 Maharathis at a time. He can attack 10 Maharathis. Actually, one Maharathi can attack how many? 1,000. 1,000 people, 1,000 soldiers he can attack. So Dasharath is one who can keep such 10 Maharathis in control in one shot. It's called Dasharath. So the kings were very powerful. Like this, as Prabhupada explains here, your real Kshatriya never surrenders. He accepts the challenge of his rival Kshatriya. And he fights either to die or to win. Surrender is unknown to your real Kshatriya. Of course, the Kshatriyas had diplomacy. Like for example, there is a famous story of a Rajput king. Rajput king and his wife. Once Mughals, they invaded a Rajput king's palace and they practically besieged from all the directions. And they killed that king also. The king was killed. So the big palace gate was closed. And the soldiers were trying to barge in. They were beating the gate. And it was very, very tall. They couldn't go inside. So they said, the only way is that we will starve them to death, all the people inside. So they made an announcement. If you don't open the gate, we will starve you to death. Because we have already, won your kingdom. We have taken over everything practically in your country. And if you don't open the door, we will starve you to death. Otherwise, you open the door. So the queen was thinking what to do, along with all the other soldiers inside. She was wondering what should be the next course of action. So this Muslim king, he was a lusty rogue. He wanted to enjoy that beautiful queen also. So he proposed, he sent a message that if the queen agrees to marry me and live with me as my queen, then this war will be declared to be over. Then there will be peace, then there will be no more battle. Then I will be king and she will be queen and I can also be ruling this place. She said, why should I marry this sinful rascal? She said, forget it, I cannot marry her. Then he sent another news. Okay, if I cannot marry her, at least if she can allow me to see her, then we will leave the kingdom and we will go away, he said. So she talked to all her servant maids and friends. She said, why should I allow this fellow to look at me? She was a chaste Hindu wife. She said, that is also not possible. But the king said, either you allow me or we will force. Very soon we will break the gate and we will come in and you will be in trouble. But they were threatening and they were forcing. And then at last, the queen agreed that you can see me in a mirror. Only in a mirror you can see. That much I will allow, that's all. And then you quit our kingdom and you go away. So, of course, her image was seen in a mirror. So when the king saw, he became more lusty, because that's the nature of lust. Not that after you seeing, you become satisfied. After seeing the queen in the mirror, then this fellow became more determined to achieve her. He said, now it's impossible, you have to marry me only. Then the queen with her friends and ministers, she made a very diplomatic plan. She said, okay, because we have no other way, we are surrendering to you. I'll marry you, but I need to prepare myself and arrange for the marriage and everything. So tomorrow evening, we will have the festival. Don't worry. When she agreed, all of them became very happy. The Muslim men back. Actually, they had put many big, big tents and bungalows they had made. So they were all there waiting all day the next day. And the next day evening, the palace big gate opened. In the meantime, the king all day was drinking and smoking and enjoying because he was in a very happy mood that he's going to get married. Then when the palace doors opened, she was coming in a palanquin along with practically hundreds of palanquins, all beautifully decorated with flowers and very nice jewelry and gems studded in the palanquins and nice fine clothes hanging, silken clothes hanging. When it was coming out, then all the soldiers, they were also lusty fellows like their king. So they were thinking, oh, so many servant maids are coming, so you marry the king and we will enjoy servant maids. So they threw away their swords, threw away their bows and arrows, and they started wearing costly garments and putting scents all over their bodies. So we will enjoy now. Now it's time for enjoyment. War is over now. And then all the palanquins came out. Suddenly there was a sound heard by all the soldiers. They were hearing the sound. And they looked down and they found from each of the palanquins, the Rajput soldiers were coming out. They were jumping out with swords and they finished up to the last man. Everyone was finished. So, here from this story you find the example of how this Muslim king, he foolishly surrendered to a woman. Here he says, yeah, ideal Kshatriya will not even surrender to a man also. He surrendered to the illusory beauty of a woman and he lost his life and his army in totality. You see? So, at the same time you find this Kshatriya woman's courage to finish him off with her diplomatic ways. So Kshatriya kings either would have the type of power, there are different types of powers. Like for example, there is a financial power. Financial power means somebody has money. With money they can, you know, arrange for hoodlums to beat up someone or hit someone. They can do like that because they have money power. Somebody may have a political power. Political power means you have like connection with the President of India or Prime Minister of India or the MLAs and MPs. You have political power. And through them, you control the police. Through them, you control the army. Through them, you control all the different departments of the country. So by your connection with them, you get your thing, accomplish what you want to do. Similarly, there is emotional power. Emotional power is the power of the cinema actors and actresses and artists. So they have fans, but their fans are based on whom? The fans are based simply on emotionally blackmailing the people, attracting the people. And then they win the popular vote, such people. That's emotional power. There is also mental power or intellectual power, it is called. Like the scientists who, with their intelligence, they make biological weapons, nuclear weapons. They make very powerful. Every country has their own scientists preparing weapons for attacking the opposite country and for making weapons for their own country. That kind of intellectual power. So there is also intuitive power, or some people have mystical powers. But amongst all these powers, the spiritual power is considered the greatest power. Why? Even worldwide, modern man is recognizing that the faith people have in spirituality, that unites millions of people under one roof. Like there are many big religions in the world. And because of the faith of the people in God, Like Kumbh Mela, you see, there are practically crores of people under one roof. You find there. Or you find Jagannath Rath Yatra, there are 10 lakh people for Jagannath Rath Yatra. Spiritual power is the greatest power. So the kings in those days were guided by the spiritual power of a Brahmana. So they had that was the greatest power. People respected the king because he was obedient to a Brahmana who had the spiritual power. And people know the connection of the king to God happens through his connection with the Brahmana, Brahmana board. So a king wouldn't act independently. A king was guided like that. In the modern times you find some cinema actor or actress, you know, because they have got some popularity amongst the public, you know, then they get votes very easily. They stand in the election and they get votes and they come to the top. But after coming to top, how are they going to rule the people? Do they know anything about ruling? First of all, they have no character at all. Because of being in that particular field, what is that field of cinema, the field of cinema and artists? Many of them don't have any character at all. And imagine putting a characterless person in the top of the society as a politician. This is the best way to ruin the society. That is the problem. So I was telling about different types of powers. In the modern times you will find people with these powers, they come to the top. Like somebody has money power. So in fact the modern society is ruled by economic lords now, not by Kshatriyas. It is ruled by the capitalists. If you have money, you are a big man in society. You can control everything. You can not only control the industries, you can not only control the policies made by the government, you can control everything in the country simply with money power. And again the same point, can we say all the people having money power have character? No. In fact, they have a great dearth of character. Because they have money, money naturally, they misuse money. So in this way we can think of each of these powers. Somebody has intellectual power, so he creates scuds and missiles and Star Wars and such weapons, you know, for his own country. So they are not well-wishers of the people of the world. You read that verse, a famous verse, Kshayaya jagato ahitaha etam drishtim avashtabhya nashtatmano alpa buddhaya prabhavanti ugra karmana kshayaya jagato ahitaha. Krishna calls them as alpa buddhaya. Scientists is calling them as alpa buddhi wale. They are very mean-minded. Why? Because kshayaya jagato ahitaha. They are actually enemies to the people of the world. They cannot create life, they can only destroy life. They cannot give life, they can only take away life. How? By creating lethal weapons, nuclear bombs, scuds and missiles. And each scientist for their own country, they create weapons and they destroy each other, killing each other, like this. So, in this way, anybody with any of these powers, they cannot do any good to the world. That is why the king requires spiritual power, and that spiritual power is applied by the guidance of a Brahmana. And such a king actually should rule the world, like Kshatriya, king like Parikshit here. And he'll be very bold. And he will never surrender. What will he not surrender to? Like today, there are politicians, although we don't want to name any particular party, but there are parties which sometimes favor the minority. There are parties which favor the majority of the people. Why? Because ultimately their goal is to get votes. For getting votes, they will do anything. They will even arrange lorries to take the people to the polling booth, and then they will also give them television, they'll give them clothes, they'll give them watches, they will promise them that we'll make cinema theaters and liquor shops in your village. And then you find, they get very respectfully get the people in the lorries and, but somehow or other they have to get vote. And which religion will they support? Any religion which will offer them votes. That's all. So you can understand, sometimes such people even use religion as a tool in order to get popular votes from the people. They tell one section of religious people something to get their votes, and they sell, I have seen many politicians go to temples before the election, and the photos are clicked and it comes in the newspaper. And some religionists say, we are so broad-minded, we go to Hindu temple, we go to church, we go to mosque, we have a sarva dharma samabhavana. Suddenly they become like that. just before the election, be fine. Yeah, and just they want to get votes, that's all. And they go to the top. This goes to show they surrender their character. They surrender their prestige, image, everything only for the sake of getting popular votes. And also many of them in the top today, they are afraid of the people of the underworld. There are underworld people who are becoming more and more powerful. Like for example, in New York there are 800 gangsters now. For example, and they are all youths carrying big, big guns, and the leaders are afraid of them. Now, although the leaders are holding the army, they have the navy, they have the air force, all these things are with them, but they fear the gangsters. They cannot control the gangsters, they cannot control the Naxalites, they cannot control the underworld people. Why? Because sometimes they themselves use them. If they themselves use them for their own purposes, how are they going to control them? Just like at one time in one of our student centers, one small boy was caught red-handed when he stole some 3-4 flash players in the morning hours. Our devotees were taking bath and they were stealing. Immediately they caught him and they found all these flash players in his pocket. So they tied his hands and legs with ropes and they gave me a call, what should we do? Then I told them, we take them to police. We took him to police in a vehicle, and they thought, we have done a great thing. We have caught the thief red-handed. Now we are handing him over to police and they will beat him to pieces. They were thinking like that. So as soon as they took him to police, the police looked at him and it appeared that, you know, they already know this boy before. And the police were telling the boy, telling our boys that, you know, you remove the rope and everything, leave the hand legs. And then the police were threatening our boys. So you are all students, and you have exams and all, go back and study, you know. Here, if you want to submit a FIR, you will take hours and hours. You know, it will become 3-4 hours for you. Your study will get spoiled. You know, leave this fellow. He's a small boy. Chhod do usko, you know, he's a small boy, he said. And when they were about to go off from the police station, the small boy was telling, "Arey, you guys are very careless. I have been passing through your house regularly. Itne mahanga mahanga cheez pade hain, so many costly things are lying." And this boy is telling, the small guy is telling our boys to take care. If you are living like this, any thief will come and steal, he is saying. So later on they came to know, this fellow is simply a tool of the police. Can you imagine? Just see. So in the same manner, how can people in the top control the hoodlums, and gangsters and all these people, if they themselves use them? Not possible. So that is why they surrender to these kind of mean forces, mean powers. They have no character. If a king in the top, like for Prabhupada, in his one of his purports, he criticizes Nixon, whether it be Nixon or Clinton or whoever it is. Somebody in the top, if he becomes devoid of character, he falls prey to opposite sex, or he falls prey to misappropriating money, or he falls prey to cheap popularity, so, or he adjusts the policies, like we call nepotism, to promote one's own relatives, to promote one's own friends, to promote one's own party people. You make the policies and everything accordingly. So your king has to be very fair in dealings. It's very important. If he's not fair, then again he loses respect in the eyes of the public also. So in this way, Prabhupada asked, is he gone? And disciples saying, Prabhupada is not gone, still he is there. And Prabhupada said, just see, the public also has become like animals. Because animals elect an animal as a leader. Prabhupada says, just like that verse, what is that verse? Shvavidu varahavshtra karehi samsuta purusha pashuhu. Nayat karana pato peto jatana magadagraja. So sometimes such people are going on in the name of leaders. We may wonder how such politicians are surviving. They should be dethroned. And good leaders should be put. But such politicians are continuing. Why? Because the public also wants to do nonsense. Just like Prabhupada says, the government of the Shudras, by the Shudras and for the Shudras. If public wants to drink, smoke and eat meat, and public wants to do this kind of activities, then how are they going to elect a wise king? who will administer true religious principles. That is why in the modern times such degradation is taking place. So here we find Parikshit Maharaj, ideal king, and he will not compromise on any principle. Just like Maharaj Ramachandra, you see, when he heard that the Dobhi was speaking something, he could have easily called the Dobhi and given him some gold and silver and told him, "My dear Dobhi, please keep quiet. Don't speak such things bad about me. And I don't want any infamy. So because I heard that you spoke these things, now I will give you some charity, I will give you a house, bungalow, everything, keep quiet." He would have done that. So Maharaj Ramachandra didn't do that. You don't find that. They don't do such kind of adjustments. They don't surrender themselves like that. Parikshit also is like that, very righteous king. If you take all the royal kings, you will always find that, like, you know, when the Pandavas were playing the gambling match with Duryodhana, at one point of time, they all kept their crown off their heads on the ground, and their top clothes were removed. They were wearing only the bottom clothes, and actually they were. It was a time when they were about to go to the forest. Pandavas would have easily begged back their kingdom. If they did so, they would have easily got it also. But a Kshatriya would never beg. You never hear a Kshatriya begging. In fact, sometimes Duryodhana asks Arjuna, "Arjuna, you have come to me, so you want your kingdom back?" But Arjuna would never utter the word, "I want my kingdom back." "Yes, I want my kingdom, but I won't beg from you." That's the difference between a Brahmana and a Kshatriya. Brahmana asks for charity. Kshatriya collects tax. That's the difference. Collecting tax means, you know, you have to give. If you don't give tax, you will be punished. That is Kshatriya. A Brahmana accepts charity. Begging is work of a Brahman. That's the difference. So, Kshatriya is never supposed to, take shelter of another Kshatriya in the way, as is explained here. So here you find the Kaliraj. He was dressed like a king, but he was a degraded person. He was doing atrocious activities. It's a very unfortunate thing. Somebody doesn't have a character, but he is posing as a leader or as a king. That's a very unfortunate thing. Here, that's what is happening. Actually, Kali is personification of all those bad activities, as it is explained. Dyutam, Panam, Striya, Suna, Yatra, Adharmas, Chaturvida. The four types of sinful activities. Meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex. These are the activities in which Kali is residing also. As it is explained in Bhagavatam. Kalena balina rajan nangshati ayuhu balam smti. Tatascha anudinam dharma satyam shaucham shamadaya. So Kali is one who degrades these things. But he is posing as whom? He is posing as a king. That creates a problem. Why? Because when one poses as a king, then others may put trust in that person if they are ignorant. The gullible masses always put trust in those who pose as leaders. Why was Prabhupada so heavy with scientists? Sometimes even devotees feel Prabhupada shouldn't be so heavy with scientists or with other leaders. Why Prabhupada is heavy? Because if somebody poses as a leader but is doing the opposite job of a leader, then it is very dangerous for the public, because public will put trust and they will get cheated. Andayatandai upaniyamana stepishatantriyam urdhamni baddhaitas. Blind leading the blind, all will fall into the ditch. So even in the Krishna consciousness movement, we should be afraid to accept the position of leadership. Why? Because as it is explained here about Kaliraj, in the same manner, if we accept the position of a leader but we misrepresent our society, say ISKCON society, or we misrepresent Prabhupada, we misrepresent Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, it's very dangerous. Because the public will have a very bad precept, a wrong example. And that will cause more damage. Somebody may say, "Why are you so upset with somebody posing as a leader?" Why? When you are not a leader, you are alone, then if you do some fault, then you only suffer. You suffer for the fault you did, and you get a punishment or whatever. But one who is a leader is guiding so many people behind. That's the whole problem. Then if one goes on a wrong track, then everyone follows that person in a wrong track. Like Kaliraj was posing. That's why Parikshit Maharaj became very angry. In fact, when the Shaunakad Rishis were hearing about how this Kaliraj was behaving, they became even more wild. They said, how did the king, Parikshit, patiently have a conversation with this Kali? Why was he unnecessarily showing such patience to such a sinful rascal? He must have killed him on the spot. There should be no negotiation or no discussion. On the spot he should have killed him. Because you say that this Kaliraj was beating a cow and a bull. How can somebody tolerate seeing someone beating a cow and a bull? What kind of king is the king, Parikshit? And why did he not kill immediately? And then the Brahmanas, those who are Shaunakad Rishis, they were telling Sutta Goswami. They got very disturbed in the mind by hearing this information. They said, please kindly speak only those things which have a connection to Krishna. Don't speak this kind of impure things, they were saying. My Lord, if they were today, you know, they would have died on the spot. Just for beating a cow and a bull, one fellow who is dressed like a king, he was a hypocrite, he was beating the cow and the bull. Simply by hearing this news, Shaunakad Rishis became enraged with great anger. Today you find millions of cows being slaughtered in organized slaughterhouses. He can't even tolerate to hear such information like this, such unfortunate information. So that is why here you find, how do we know Kaliraj is not the real king? Because he is falling at the feet. He is falling at the feet of Parikshit. And he removed his crown, he removed his dress, and he fell at the feet and said, please spare my life. I don't want to die. He is surrendering his life to Parikshit. Of course, there is another principle of Kshatriya, that if somebody surrenders, you should not take away their life. That is another principle of Kshatriya also. Somebody who surrenders, if he surrendered means he has already given his life up for a Kshatriya. Giving up his, surrendering is as good as giving up life. So there is no more point in taking away his life. His life is already gone. So that is a point. So in this way, therefore when the artificially dressed personality of Kali saw that to fight Maharaj Parikshit was beyond his ability, he bowed down his head like a subordinate and gave up his royal dress. So what help can we get in our lives from this kind of nature of a Kshatriya, not to surrender? Because the path of devotion service, we teach more and more to surrender. That we should become servant of the servant, we should always surrender to devotees, we should be submissive. So by hearing this kind of purports, Kshatriya purport, maybe we may take wrong lessons. And we may say, I will never surrender to you, Prabhu. You know, isn't it? So we have to know how to apply the teachings of Bhagavatam in our personal life. Prabhupada has made a one-to-one comparison between Kshatriya, Kshatriya spirit and a devotee spirit also, if you read his purports in many places. Kshatriya spirit is kill or be killed. Only either of the two. Kill and conquer or be killed. So there is nothing in between. In the same manner, for a devotee, either you give up your material desires and you conquer Maya by surrendering to Krishna, or bloop, either of the two. Bloop means to give up Krishna consciousness. There is nothing in between. So we have to understand, unless we are making an attempt in our life strenuously to give up material desires, anybody who likes to harbor material desires will not last long in Krishna consciousness. One who holds on to material desires and thinks that they are all right, they are very nice, I can go on. Like you see Dhruva Maharaj, for example, he had a material desire, but he was doing some homework. He went to Narada. He also had a Kshatriya spirit. When Narada told him that, you know, no, don't worry, everything will be all right, go home. He said, no, nothing doing. I want to see Lord Vishnu. And then he guided him. So he went to forest, he performed severe penances, austerities and penances he performed. And then he find him conquering his material desires by getting darshan of Lord Vishnu at last. So he was in the right direction. Similarly, a devotee should be in the right direction of gradually unfolding Krishna consciousness, and also gradually losing the knot of the material existence. little by little. Not that we accept more and more knots of material existence. We should be untying the knots, and gradually we should be going higher and higher in Krishna consciousness. That is why, if one is in that direction, that means we are also killing our material desires one by one. You will see. You know, 10 years ago I had this material desire. What is my situation now? Do I have the same, or it has multiplied into another 20 more desires? Or am I gradually getting rid of the material desires? So how can we do this test? We can see how much are we fascinated by the worldly things. If you are fascinated by, you know, glamorous dresses and polished cars and fine roads and money and prestige and image and impressing others. So we can easily see, if you have attraction for the worldly things, is it increasing or is it gradually drying up? That is one very easy way to check our advancement in Krishna consciousness. So actually this is the way Krishna consciousness works. If you read all the pastimes of Krishna, each of the pastimes has a deep meaning. Like you see this Trinavrat, for example. Krishna, Trinavrat, the whirlwind demon who took Krishna to the sky high portion, and then what Krishna does, he catches him by the neck very strongly and increases his weight. By increasing his weight, what he did? He brought him, crashing him to the ground, and then Trinavrat is finished. You see like that. Similarly, our weight of Krishna consciousness should increase to destroy all the material desires in our heart. Otherwise, some people feel, despite performing devotional life for many years, the weight of material desires is increasing and they feel helpless. Have you seen anybody who has fallen into a current of a river? Anybody has experience of this? You fall into the current of a river. The Bhagavatam also uses this example. Now, what is that verse? Kasyam tvanadritya paranu chintam rite pashu nasatim nama kuryat pashyanjanam paritapan jushanam. That verse says that. That all the living beings in this world have fallen into a current of the wave of material ocean. And it is very, very powerful tide, bhava pravaha. And they are crying. They have no control of themselves. They are not able to, like, you know, if you are on land, you can stand. If you are in water, water will just drag you. So to the degree we allow our mind and senses to be controlled by Maya, what will happen? Over a period of time, we will lose control over them. We cannot control mind and senses. And to the degree we perform Krishna conscious austerities and penances, to that degree the mind and senses become calm, and at the same time the material desires will be gradually killed one by one. They will be destroyed over a period of time. So that is the first principle. So kill or be killed is Kshatriya spirit. Similarly, kill our material desires or be killed by them or be consumed by them. It is said. So without getting consumed by material desires, how we can advance? By surrendering to Krishna. By advancing in Krishna consciousness. Similarly, your Kshatriya also has a military training before going to the battle. He prepares himself. Like here we are living in the battalion in Pune camp. Every morning they are giving training to all their people, soldiers. Now there is no war, but there is preparatory training is going on. Similarly, a devotee also has sadhana bhakti training. So that training is very similar also. Although we may say, where is Maya? Maya may not be attacking immediately, but we are preparing for that attack. Anytime we are attacked by Maya, we have to face that battle against Maya. Prabhupada says, as soon as one takes to Krishna consciousness, one is openly declaring a war against Maya. Prabhupada says in one purport, declaring a war against Maya, because the whole world is Maya's kingdom, the material world. And we are trying to be Krishna conscious in the material world. So we are declaring a war. And sadhana bhakti and association devotees is like preparation. We do that. Another thing is, a kshatriya simply surrenders to the order of the army chief officer or the commander. So the commander tells him, lie down now. Immediately lies down. Stand up. He stands up. Run now. You run. Shoot now. Shoot. No second question. If any of you have been in NCC, you will have this experience. In NCC, they train like this. You have to hear the instruction very attentively. And as soon as you hear the instruction, immediately follow it. No second question. In fact, in the battle, If somebody is not following, if somebody is asking a question, they are generally not sent to the battle. They are told, better you can be in the ward where you are, you know, applying medicine for the wounded soldiers. You can go to that ward, go to the backside and do that. Because if you have to be in the battle, you have to hear the instruction and follow it. So that is surrender to the spiritual master. Arana koriho mane asha, we say, no? Don't put your mind, don't involve yourself in mental speculation. Just hear the instruction very attentively. Be alert and follow the instruction. Also in army they teach giving up whimsical behavior. This is also a part of the army training. One should give up whimsical behavior. Doing something what one wants to do, or one's mind wants to do, irrespective of the spiritual master. So that is very much applicable to Vaishnava life also. In Vaishnava life, you can do so many things if you want. There are, somebody can become a Sanskrit scholar, somebody can become an Ayurvedic expert, somebody can, you know, you can get into any Purana you want, and your entire life will go reading all the Puranas if you want. So we have to know what we are supposed to do if you have to achieve the ultimate goal of going back to Godhead, you know. This is the formula, prescription. Follow the prescription very carefully. So giving up independent mindedness. So, Prabhupada would sometimes compare these Kshatriya qualities to the life of a Vaishnava devotee also. So we can take such principles. Like surrender is unknown to a real Kshatriya, Prabhupada says here. Similarly, we can say a Vaishnava is one who will never surrender to Maya at any cost. Prabhupada says, Grihetako Vanetako Sadahari Poledako, he says. He will fight against Maya either as a brahmachari or a sannyasi. Or he will fight against Maya as a grihastha. He will never say that, okay, now Maya is too powerful, I will give up Krishna for some time. Maybe for this lifetime I will enjoy with Maya. Krishna we will see later. He will never do that. He will always fight against Maya in any ashrama. So that's what Prabhupada talks about it in the Gajendra Moksha also. Prabhupada says, we have to fight, we must, either on the land or on the water. So the elephant was fighting in the water against the crocodile. Of course, if the elephant could pull the crocodile out of the water, then the fight would have been even more easier for him. Because once the crocodile is brought, dragged by the elephant to the land, when the crocodile comes out, then the elephant can pound on his head with his leg, punch on his head and make him a chutney. Isn't it? But because he was in the water, the elephant had to struggle a lot. But the elephant was ready to undergo the struggle. That is the whole point. Similarly, a devotee should fight also. Actually, every living being in this world is subjected to material desires. Every living being in this material world is subjected to the pulls and pushes of the senses in the mind, away from Krishna consciousness. Every one of us can experience that at different times. So, how much are we serious about endeavoring to surrender to Krishna without, you know, simply being dragged by them and saying that what can I do? These are my conditionings. What can I do? In fact, there are many people who have given up chanting. There are many people who have given up practicing the four regulative principles. And they just get swayed by the current of the material world. So that means they have given up the battle. Now who can we say is undergoing the battle? In any ashram, if somebody is following the four regulative principles and chanting the holy name and staying in the company of devotees, studying Prabhupada books, and in a very spirited way practicing, then you are fighting against Maya. Otherwise we are not fighting. So there is a tendency that we can become complacent. Like that king I was telling you, he actually won the battle by killing that Hindu king, that Muslim king. He killed the Hindu king and he also besieged the whole fort also, and then he was trying to, you know, open the door and everything. So almost victory. But he became complacent. And then what happened? When he became complacent, he wanted to see the beauty of the Hindu king's wife. And he wanted to marry her and wanted to enjoy with her. And then he became tricked by the intelligent queen. And then he also was killed and all his soldiers were killed. Just see, this is the result of complacency. Because if a little victory comes, we become proud. That is the problem. And that is the time, have you heard this famous saying, a lull before the storm. A lull before the storm, and sometimes the ocean looks very serene very calm, very quiet, cool. There seemed to be no problem, and the ship is sailing very smoothly, and everyone inside the ship is talking. Seems that, you know, there is no challenge. Seems that there is no problem. And then you find the big storm starts after that. And you, unexpected, sometimes. Actually, Maya Devi attacks in two ways. One is, you know, a least expected moment, like that, she beats you down. And knocked immediately, one moment she knocks off. That's one way she does. Another thing is, you know, like the rats biting. Little by little. They keep biting, you've seen, little by little by little, 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 and then they come in. They make a hole and come. Maya Devi also works little, 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 little. For a devotee, over a period of time, she makes him, first thing she does it is to make the devotee complacent. Okay, you know, you are following four regs, chanting 16 rounds, you are also a preacher, and so many, you are influencing so many people, and after all, you are, you know, there is nothing wrong in your life, everything is all right. So, we can go to this cozy platform of, you know, being a very wonderful devotee. And as we go on, we will realize, little by little, she has swallowed our consciousness. And we cannot blissfully engage in Krishna consciousness if you become complacent like that. So she attacks in different ways for different people like this. So that's why he says, surrender is unknown to a real Kshatriya, Prabhupada says here. Similarly, a devotee will never surrender. There is a very famous verse in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. That verse is especially for the grihastha devotees. That verse says, a grihastha who in the course of his karma, the karma takes him to a situation where, you know, he has to do some job, he has to get married, then he has wife, he is surrounded by, he finds himself surrounded by home, surrounded by wife and children, surrounded by job and work and all that. But his eagerness and longing to surrender to Krishna is not even diminished a little bit. Not even. He has that ardent desire to attain Krishna. And in the course of fulfilling his duties to the home and to the office and all that, he is fulfilling his duties externally, but his heart is given to Krishna. And while living a life like that, sometimes he becomes fond of illusory pleasures like the beauty of his wife or beauty of his children. Sometimes he relishes them. And when he relishes these things, he curses himself. Alas, alas, my dear Lord, what a fool am I? I am enjoying these illusory pleasures. I am enjoying the talk of my sweet child. And I am walking off my toddler child. That the child is walking. Our child is crawling. I pick up the child and I embrace the child, kiss the child, and I am thinking, you know, this is pleasure. But actually I am supposed to be your devotee. What am I doing? So, when he engages in illusion, he immediately comes out of the illusion and he curses himself, understanding that ultimate object of love is Krishna only. So let me engage my wife, children, family members, and my job and everything in Krishna's service. In this way, let me purify my consciousness. Like that a person thinks. So, in that verse, purport if you read, it's explained very wonderfully that we all have worldly duties to do. So, there is a likelihood that while performing those worldly duties, one may tend to forget Krishna. But when we say surrender is unknown to a real Kshatriya, means surrender to Maya is unknown to a real Vaishnava. A Vaishnava will never surrender to Maya completely. Although, sometimes there will be opportunities which will come in one's life which may try to distract one away from Krishna's service. You know that famous verse of Madhavendra Puri, where he says, Nindan, he says, no, Nigadan, what is that verse? In that way, let the sharp moralists accuse me, let my relatives ridicule me. Kulashekara, is it? Nindantu Bandhava Sarve. Yeah. So there he says, let my relatives humiliate me. Let the sharp moralists accuse me to be a fool. Let the Vedic followers call me I am irreligious. So many things he says. But my determination to surrender to Krishna will not even waver one inch by the influence of all these people, he says. That is the determination of a devotee. The Kshatriya has a determination not to surrender to the enemy. Similarly, sometimes by the influence of the relatives, a devotee's heart can become melted. One may think, it seems that, you know, Krishna consciousness is too demanding. That, you know, why should we make the parents cry? Why should we make, relatives become displeased? Why should the people in the society humiliate my family prestige? Krishna consciousness is too demanding. Somebody may feel like that. I am not only telling about brahmacharis, I am talking about grihasthas also. Because grihasthas have almost equal amount of trouble from their parents and relatives when it comes to, you know, leading a pure Krishna conscious life. Because many parents think that God means, you know, you should spend a few minutes in the morning, that's all. Just, you know, 5 minutes, ring a bell, all day there are so many things to do. We have to go to movies, we have to go, you know, we have to, you know, worry about this in life, that in life, family prestige, function, party, and so many things. For them, God is also one small, insignificant element of their life. It's like, you know, 2% or 1% of life, you know. But when they see their son or daughter becoming very Krishna conscious, and they don't seem to be showing so much interest in economic development. On the other hand, they are all the time running to temple for festivals, and for doing seva, and chanting couple of hours in the morning, Hare Krishna, trying to purify their consciousness, heart. And also all the time talking about Krishna. 24 hours consciousness is too much for many people. Many people, they think, you know, what is this? So for them, because they are absorbed in material life, they think Krishna consciousness is too much. So such a person, even in family life, has to have this determination that I'll never surrender to Maya. That's the real story of a devotee. His father was a millionaire. So his father has been mildly telling this son, he was the only son, that, you know, my dear son, you are going to get married shortly. You know, don't go to temple too much. But in those days he was chanting 4 rounds or 5 rounds Hare Krishna. And then this boy got married, and then he came to 16 rounds. His wife was a devotee also. And the father was observing, it was becoming too much. And then at one point of time, after marriage, 4 or 5 years passed, the father became really wild. He said, now I'm going to stop all your activities. What is this? You know, you have become too serious. Because by the time the boy was almost initiated. So he became very serious in Krishna consciousness. So the father said, now you have to decide. Either you stop all your activities, stop chanting, throw away this kantimala, don't put all this tilak and everything, do business and you expand your material position better, and you stay at home and do exactly what I tell you, or I want to kick you out of the house. You have to go out and have you and your wife go out and you have your own house and you manage your own funds. I will not give you a single penny. I will not even give you a loan also, he said, although you are my son. So what do you want to do? The son chose the second option. Can you imagine? Yeah. He went out. He said to his wife, years, practically 10, 15 years he did that, stayed alone. Later on the father got very old, and once he had to be admitted in the hospital. See, the son was so kind, he would go to meet his father time to time with his wife. And many relatives were saying, why the son is coming? So that, you know, the money in father's name will be transferred to his account after his death, you know. So he can keep, you know, little touch, regular touch, monthly once touch with the father. But he told the father, you write off all the money to whomever you want. The relatives who are talking about me like this, if you want, you can write in their name also, I have no problem. I don't want a single penny of yours. I am coming to meet you, why? Because I happen to be your son. I just want to serve you and help you, that's all. And he was doing that. And once after 10, 15 years, his father got so sick, then he was in ICU, admitted in the hospital. So the son and his the boy's wife, you know, they were taking such good care of him. And the devotees were also going regularly. And the father's heart gradually transformed. Over a period of almost 3 or 4 weeks in ICU, being in the hospital and observing the devotees, hearing the philosophy. He thought he was going to die, so he was hearing some lectures also. Somehow he survived after that. Yeah. And then again he called his son back to home. He said, now you come and live with me only now. Anyway, you have undergone a lot of trouble in the last so many years. So why I am telling you this? This is a test. So the son was determined not to surrender to Maya. See, on one hand, he has the ancestral money. Crores of rupees. He would have become the adipati of crores of rupees. Crorepati. He would have become. Here on the other hand, what is Krishna offering? Krishna is saying, I will give you myself and zero money, nothing. Exactly like Duryodhana and Arjuna, right? He had both the attractions, but he chose this. So, we can learn such lessons when we come across purports like this in our personal lives. So, if you make the right choice, then we can get Krishna. Otherwise, we will not get Krishna. When the personality of Kali understood that the king was willing to kill him, he at once abandoned the dress of a king and, under pressure of fear, completely surrendered to him, bowing his head. So we all have the pressure of fear offered by society, pressure of fear offered by Maya coming in various ways, and we succumb to the temptations, which is actually not befitting a wise person. So despite all the multiple material pressures offered from all directions, a devotee should be like a Chataka Pakshi. A Chataka Pakshi always looks up to the sky for the rain water. He never drinks the water, you know, of the puddles and the muddy pools of water and the dirty reservoirs of the water in the material, in the ground level. He only takes water straight from the sky. So a devotee should always aspire for Krishna's mercy coming from the top. And never succumb to all the temptations out of fear or out of luxury or out of comfort or out of immediate convenience or out of peer pressure, social pressure. Hare Krishna. Kandra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktavinda ki. Thank you.